Support for After All Things comes from the listeners of WSHU, a public radio station serving Connecticut and Long Island. For daily news and culture from around the Sound, listen at WSHU.org or download the WSHU app. You're listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news and culture update from the Long Island Sound region. Nearly 250 people have died in traffic fatalities in Connecticut this year. New York's military veterans have more mental and physical health problems than civilians. Wall Street profits increased more than 79% in the first half of the year compared with the same period last year. And a New York-based nonprofit is donating medical supplies to victims of hurricanes in the South. Those stories and more are ahead. I'm Molly Ingram, in for Sabrina Garone. Nearly 250 people have died in traffic fatalities in Connecticut this year. That's about 50 more deaths than in all of 2019, the year before the pandemic. Governor Ned Lamont says the state needs more sidewalks and better signage, but he also wants cooperation from drivers.
We can't just enforce our way out of this. You know, I need each and every one of you to look out for each other. You got to remember the line, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
Lawmakers say driving habits have gotten worse since the COVID-19 pandemic. The deaths of a state police officer and construction worker drew increased attention to the issue this summer. More than 60% of military veterans in New York State are disabled. That's according to a report that studied veterans' mental and physical health. WSHU's Desiree DiOrio reports.
The report is a mixed bag. More veterans experience depression and PTSD, but more are also getting mental health care. One in four veterans experience food insecurity, but they have high levels of education and employment. The New York Health Foundation commissioned the report and compared it to a similar study from 2010. Derek Coy is a former Marine Corps sergeant with the foundation. He says Long Island has a lot of resources for veterans, but they need to be more accessible.
And you have two of the five most highly populated veteran populations in the two counties there. So you would assume that there'd be a lot of access, and there is. There's great resources, but transportation can be really tricky if you're driving or if you have maybe a physical disability and public transportation is your only option.
Coy says programs that offer peer-to-peer support, like the Joseph P. Dwyer program that began in Suffolk County, can destigmatize mental health problems and reduce social isolation. Desiree DiOrio, WSHU News.
Wall Street profits increased more than 79% in the first half of the year compared with the same period last year, and annual profits are expected to finish the year much stronger than 2023's mark. That's according to a new report from the New York State Comptroller, Tom DiNapoli. He says profits could reach $47 billion by the end of the year if the current pace continues.
There have been a lot of macro changes that have benefited this industry, the securities industry in New York City. Obviously, coming out of the pandemic and more stability with the economy, all of the money that the federal government has pumped into the economy in recent years. I certainly think more recently why we're optimistic this trend will continue, the interest rate cut.
The Democrat says the upward trends will help boost state and New York City tax revenues.
Local support comes from Hartford HealthCare, the only health system in the Northeast, with all its hospitals receiving A grades for safety from the Leapfrog Group, the nation's leading independent safety watchdog group. HartfordHealthCare.org.
More marijuana dispensaries are set to open on Long Island this fall, joining three others in the region. The first dispensary in Southampton opened last week. Another two will open in Riverhead in the next 2 months. Supporters say the dispensaries will bring the region high tax revenues. Opponents say they raise crime rates in neighborhoods. Students at Yale University overwhelmingly support Democratic candidate Kamala Harris for president, according to a poll by the college's newspaper. Only 8% of the college's nearly 1,000 students polled said they would vote for Donald Trump. The poll also found male and female students at the university are both left-leaning, women more so than men. As the South recovers from Hurricane Helene and prepares for Milton, a nonprofit medical supply company in New York is getting ready to help with relief efforts. I spoke with Danielle Buten, the founder of the Afia Foundation, about how they've helped divert perfectly good medical supplies from landfills for more than 15 years. So I want to start at the beginning. Tell me about your 2007 trip to Tanzania and how it inspired your company.
So I had left a executive position in healthcare and I went on vacation and I really had no idea what was going to be next. And while I was in the Serengeti Plains, it became very clear. And a woman was crying alone in a tent with a glass of wine in her hand, sobbing. And I walked up to her and said, "What's happening here? And are you okay?" And she said, "I'm not okay. I am the woman's health doctor in London. I have come here to do medical mission work. There are no medical supplies anywhere. I'm watching children die. I know how to treat them, but I have nothing to help people recover." And it was one of those moments, and we all have these moments where you hear the story of another and you have this big compassionate response, but this was, you have to do something. You have to do something about this. And not in a grand way, but in a very practical, there has to be a solution here that I can take on. And I'd worked in healthcare my entire life. So I came home to New York. I walked uninvited through the waste management tunnels of the biggest and best hospitals of New York. Everyone screaming, "Lady, what are you doing in our garbage?" And I wasn't in the bloodborne contaminated garbage. I was in the laundry bins of, you know, still wrapped, sterile, not expired IV solutions and IV starter kits. And I said to the guys there, What is this and why is this?" And they said, "Because in the United States, we are the only nation that medical supply is exposed to the patient, it has to be discarded in ORs, in patient rooms, in ERs. You open a pack, you use two things, the rest has to be discarded. And this is a multi-billion-dollar opportunity. This stuff should not be burned. When you look at the needs abroad, it is extraordinary." So I named the work Afia. It means health in the Kiswahili language. It is my heart's hat tip to the land that whispered the work. And that was the launch of Afia.
How many hospitals do you get donations from today?
So today we are, most of the hospitals in the greater New York area have donated to us at least once. Some of the hospitals are steady donors and we have a systematic process with them. But we are launching a coalition. So what we are launching is a movement in New York to invite all of the health systems, nursing homes, hospitals, home care, urgent care centers to see Afia as a greening solution, so that we can create a coalition that is throughout the New York area committed to doing something really extraordinary with these supplies. And being the first city in the United States where that is an effort that all have a hand in.
How do you decide who needs the supplies? Do people reach out to you?
So we vet our partners really carefully because this is an enormous amount of work. Supplies come into Afia, for example, in bags or in boxes, and it's all mixed product. So we need thousands of volunteers to help us, one, make sure we send nothing expired, two, to make sure that every box is sent with respect and dignity. So I'm not going to have a pediatric surgeon in sub-Saharan Africa rummage through a box to find a pediatric stent for a cardiac operation. So what we do is we vet our partners carefully, we ask them what they need, and we only deliver that. And so Afia's model is about strengthening the healthcare system that remains. We're not flying everyone in to save the day. That's the strength of others. But we are very aware of the fact that people working chronically in under-resourced health settings, the Caribbean, sub-Saharan Africa, now Ukraine during this war, are at risk for leaving because it can be it can just be demoralizing not to be able to do the work you're trained to do if you don't have the supplies, just like that woman I met in the Serengeti Plains. So we want to help people stay and we want to keep them well stocked. So we are doing health system strengthening work in sub-Saharan Africa, in the Caribbean. We have steady partners. We want to give them ongoing access to supplies. We, after COVID, we could not abandon ship for the work we were doing in New York with community safety net programs and federally qualified health centers that needed more supplies, and Title I school nurses who don't have privacy screens when kids are sick, or they don't have a medical refrigerator to store their children's medications. We had to really entrench in the New York area and continue to be a place where New York providers could turn to us in the community and we can offer them support. And finally, we do a lot during disasters. I mean, we are now responding to Hurricane Helene sites. We're doing huge work there, and we have a Category 5 coming in that is going to require even more work that is hurricane related.
How successful have you been with this? How much have you donated?
So we have, since the beginning, we have shipped over 16 million pounds of donated supplies. Its value is $63 million in supplies. We've sent to 87 nations, 23 states. And, you know, What I really love about this work is that it gives folks who are often unheard and unseen a place to go. And so the work we've done in Ukraine since the beginning of the war, there are practitioners on the front line who know we've got their back, and there isn't anything they can't ask us for that we're not going to figure out how to get it in their hands really fast. And I think that's really, I think that's critically important in helping people to stay and do the work they're trained to do.
And so another aspect of this is that you're diverting this stuff from landfill, from being thrown out. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Yes. Yeah, so it's, for me, it's such an interesting piece in that I feel like these supplies, by the time they arrive, are priceless. They're priceless because they have been rescued from unnecessary incineration, and they can be the solution for a terrible wound that needs dressing, otherwise would have had nothing. But also we have thousands of volunteers lending their time and their hearts and their hands to this work and helping us prepare. And hundreds of those volunteers are coming to us through day treatment programs for people with autism and IDD and long-term mental health issues, and people who we're helping with sorting programs in our local county jail. And so everyone has this opportunity for altruism, and it works and it's gorgeous. But all of these moments lead to like this extraordinary delivery of supplies that I think are really, truly priceless. We are a waste aversion solution for the hospitals we work with. This can be a far more effective redirect for supplies than discarding them. And, you know, the goal is to increase that reach and the volume of donated supplies considerably by starting this coalition.
So I'm just wondering, when you sit back and you reflect on when you started this company in 2007, did you ever see a future like this? Did you think it would ever become something as big as it has?
That's such a good question. I envisioned us starting, like I started this out of the garage in my house. And if I received a urinary catheter, I was so happy. And now I walk through the warehouse and it's still astonishing to me that we've been able to come this far. No, but I set really, and I think this is really important when people launch an idea that doesn't yet exist. I started really small. And so it was baby steps and baby steps and baby steps so that I could wrap my arms around the learnings of every single new discovery along the way. I think if I had overreached at the start, we'd never be where we are today. But it was truly baby steps and then catching my breath, learning, and then setting the target for the next.
Thank you so much, Danielle. Thank you. For the latest news from the Long Island Sound region, listen on the radio, stream on WSHU.org, or download the WSHU app. After All Things is supported by Hartford HealthCare. I'm Molly Ingram, in for Sabrina Garone.